We are chosen not in the palace, but in the furnace. In the furnace, beauty is marred, fashion is destroyed, strength is melted, glory is consumed, and here, eternal love reveals its secret and declares its choice.
Welcome to Mission 66, your daily journey through God's Word, powered by Bible teacher Dr. Luis Seau and Transworld Radio. We're currently in the book of Genesis. Want to go deeper? Grab your free study guide at mission66.org. Now let's dive in with our teacher, John Matthews, and co-host, Esther Sisulu.
Welcome to our Bible study program. And today it's time to celebrate a milestone as we've come to the final chapter in the book of Genesis. And here we will learn some of life's lessons in the midst of two funerals. As one generation dies off, another one rises. And as we look at chapter 50 of the book of Genesis today, our teacher John Matthews will bring us the theme, Stop Complaining.
Esther, thank you so much and a very warm welcome to Mission 66, wherever you join us from today. It is so good, as always, to be with you. And Esther said it there, we've reached the final chapter in the first book of the Bible, and what a book Genesis is. And this chapter sees us coming to the end of Joseph's story, taking us, as it does, from the death of his father Jacob up to his own death. And so there is a fair bit of sadness that is seen in this chapter as Joseph's suffering is described, how he was betrayed by his brothers. And yet we'll see how God turns everything that his brothers meant for evil into good. Often, you know, in life, it's similar for us. Why is that? Why does it have to be that way? Sometimes you hear that it's all about comfort and prosperity. But actually, the overriding message of Jesus Christ is the opposite to that. This is what Charles Spurgeon once said. God says, I have chosen you in the furnace of affliction. This has long been the motto fixed before our eye upon the wall of our bedchamber. And in many ways, it has also been written on our heart. It is no mean thing to be chosen of God. God's choice makes chosen men choice men. We are chosen not in the palace, but in the furnace. In the furnace, beauty is marred, fashion is destroyed, strength is melted, glory is consumed. Here, eternal love reveals its secrets and declares its choice. So has it been in our case. Therefore, if today the furnace be heated seven times hotter, we will not dread it. For the glorious Son of God will walk with us amidst the glowing coals. You know, our journey to understanding hardship may be lifelong, or we may never understand this side of eternity. But God is good. He is more for us than we can ever grasp. And whether we recognize it or not, he works all things together for the good of those who love him. So let's read Genesis chapter 50. Then Joseph fell on his father's face and wept over him and kissed him. And Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father. So the physicians embalmed Israel. 40 days were required for it, for that is how many are required for embalming. And the Egyptians wept for him 70 days. And when the days of weeping for him were past, Joseph spoke to the household of Pharaoh, saying, If now I have found favor in your eyes, please speak in the ears of Pharaoh, saying, My father made me swear, saying, I am about to die. In my tomb that I hewed out for myself in the land of Canaan, there shall you bury me. Now therefore, let me please go up and bury my father. Then I will return. And Pharaoh answered, Go up. and bury your father as he made you swear. So Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his household, and all the elders of the land of Egypt, as well as all the household of Joseph, his brothers, and his father's household. Only their children, their flocks, and their herds were left in the land of Goshen. And there went up with him both chariots and horsemen. It was a very great company. And when they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond the Jordan, they lamented there with a very great and grievous lamentation. And he made a mourning for his father 7 days. When the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning on the threshing floor of Atad, they said, "This is a grievous mourning by the Egyptians." Therefore the place was named Abel Mizraim, which being translated means the sorrow of Egypt. It's beyond the Jordan. Thus his sons did for him as he had commanded them. For his sons carried him to the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field at Machpelah to the east of Mamre, which Abraham bought with the field from Ephron the Hittite to possess as a burying place. After he had buried his father, Joseph returned to Egypt with his brothers and all who had gone up with him to bury his father. And that cave at Machpelah was the resting place then of his forebears as well, Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, and Rebekah. And when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "It may be that Joseph will now hate us and pay us back for all the evil that we did to him." So they sent a message to Joseph saying, "Your father gave this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgression of your brothers and their sin because they did evil to you. And now, please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father." Joseph wept when they spoke to him. His brothers also came and they fell down before him and they said, "Behold, we are your servants." But Joseph said to them, "Do not fear, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear, I will provide for you and your little ones." Thus he comforted them, and he spoke kindly to them. That's quite a section, isn't it? Verses 15 through 21. It's an important one as well. It holds some really important guidance because Joseph's brothers were in a panic, fearing that once Jacob had died, Joseph would now bring all the power of the Egyptian army against them and perhaps destroy them and pay them back for the evil that they had done to him. They didn't even have the courage to face Joseph personally because they were greatly ashamed and afraid. So instead they write a message humbly asking Joseph to pardon the things that they had done to him. And so here we discover that they had carried this terrible burden of guilt for years. And now when they finally met up with Joseph, they're overtaken by this fear that he would, after all, take vengeance against them. But he did not. In fact, Joseph wept. I love that. And he speaks kindly to them. His brothers then come and throw themselves down before Joseph. But look at what forgiveness does here. It's a freeing, exhilarating thing. Forgiveness restores marriages. Forgiveness restores relationships. Forgiveness sets us free from the sin in which we bind ourselves. Forgiveness stops wars from happening. We need more forgiveness in our homes, in our lives, in our countries. Verse 22 goes on. So Joseph remained in Egypt, he and his father's house. And Joseph lived 110 years. And Joseph saw Ephraim's children of the third generation. The children also of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were counted as Joseph's own. And Joseph said to his brothers, I am about to die, but God will visit you and bring you up out of this land to the land that he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. And so Joseph, like his forefathers, would be buried not in Egypt, but in the land of Canaan, which was, of course, the land which God had promised to Abraham and his descendants many years before.
This is Mission 66, and we're studying the Bible with our teacher, John Matthews, and this is the last chapter of the book of Genesis. Now, if you'd like to follow along with our teaching each day, well, be sure to get your Mission 66 study guide. Now, we put this together so that you'll be able to reference every lesson in our journey through those 66 books of the Bible. So you can download it now at mission66.org. Now, perhaps you might have the study guide already, and if so, please make sure that you use it as you listen to Mission 66. Now, when you download the study guide, you'll also be registered to receive our weekly newsletter this week on Mission 66, and with that, you'll get a day-by-day preview of what's coming up in the week ahead. Plus, you'll also receive other valuable content that goes along with the program. So receive the weekly newsletter when you download the study guide at mission66.org. Well, you know, there are just a few questions that are related to the end of Joseph's experience, John, before we now head into the next phase of the history of the ancient Israelites that we'll, of course, read in the book of Exodus. So it says that the Egyptians embalmed Jacob. Now, when I think embalming, I think mummification. So did Jacob become a mummy?
I think the answer is he probably did, Esther, because embalming and mummification was really common in ancient Egypt, and it was generally done to important people. Now, by our present day archaeological discoveries, we know that the ancient Egyptians were an incredibly advanced society, and that meant they had advanced medical knowledge compared to the rest of the world at the time, and that also included advanced architectural ability and plenty more besides. And you know, there are cases of some people who were extremely well embalmed, and when their bodies were discovered, they were then found to be really well preserved after many thousands of years. So, you know, it's possible that Jacob received this pharaoh-like mummification, although non-pharaoh's mummification was not as thorough as the pharaohs. So the idea of mummification, just because you've asked the question, and I think it's quite an interesting point actually, well, the idea was to preserve soft tissue. Now, the way it was done generally, and you'll excuse me here for perhaps being a little bit too descriptive or explicit, but they would somehow suck the brain out through the person's nose or mouth. Imagine that. Then they would also remove the internal organs, drain the body fluids, and fill the cavities with the likes of herbs, spices, and materials that would help preserve the body. So quite a process. Imagine thinking that up. Besides that, though, the Egyptian climate was dry, and that meant it was favourable for preserving mummies. Now, the Hebrews had a very different perspective of life after death and resurrection than did the Egyptians. So it's possible that Jacob's mummification was not a complete job, but they did enough with the oils and the spices so that Jacob's body then was preserved enough to last while it was transported back to Canaan. But the Bible doesn't go into detail about that.
Well, look, John, that was quite informative. That was some information that I didn't quite know, so that was good to get to know. But speaking of Canaan, and I suppose just out of curiosity, we know that Jacob's family goes all the way to Canaan just for his burial and his funeral. I wonder why they didn't just stay there, because this was the land that God had promised them to have. So why didn't they just stay?
Well, they'd been in Egypt long enough, I think, to feel at home there. The land of Goshen, where they were in Egypt, was lush, great for raising livestock, and the situation at this time in Egypt was really favourable. So they probably thought, well, why should we move? Let's stay where we are. Their children would have considered it home. Now, as you alluded to there, they're eventually going to go back, not just to live, but to possess Canaan, because God will draw them back into the land, and we'll see that begin to happen when we get to the book of Exodus, which actually, Esther, is the very next episode.
Oh, and I'm really excited to study through the book of Exodus. But, you know, speaking of Joseph's brothers, were they still resistant to God, despite the fact that they begged Joseph for his forgiveness?
Well, the Bible doesn't say that Joseph's brothers were actually resistant to God, but it's evident that they didn't have the same close relationship with God that Joseph did. Genesis shows us a contrast between Joseph and the rest of his brothers. Now, they were perhaps what you might consider regular day-to-day normal humanity. They weren't hot nor cold with respect to God. As far as we can discern, they just went along with the rest of the world. But Joseph was different in that he deferred to God in every instance. It's not written that he ever complained about anything. He wouldn't sin against God when he was disowned by his brothers. He wouldn't sin against God when he was tempted by Potiphar's wife. Didn't protest when he was thrown into prison. And so he honours God every time he's able to interpret a dream. He gives glory to God. And so he's enduring this hardship patiently, believing that God was with him no matter what. What a lovely way to be. And you know, we can be that way as well. We really can. You know, the theme today is stop complaining. And instead, we can ask God for the patience that allows us to see how he will work things out for our good and trust him with our path. And Joseph is a great example of that, because he grew and he learned from his many negative experiences. And he was then, by the end, as a result of seeing God's hand at work and having that patience and wisdom, he was really willing, actually, to forgive his brothers. And that's something that doesn't come easily. You know, that's, I say it in a quick sentence here on Mission 66, but forgiveness is not easy. And, you know, really true forgiveness needs a close walk with God, the ultimate forgiver.
Mm. Let's in fact talk about forgiveness. I mean, you mentioned it there. It's not easy. And I mean, Jesus, he commands us. He tells us to forgive. Yet I think for so many of us, we really still struggle with this, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely right, Esther. And yeah, I include myself in that. It's true. And I suppose what is striking actually about Joseph's forgiveness is that it's total. You know, there's no half measures. It was complete forgiveness. He didn't hold a shred of animosity toward any of them. Now, gosh, I know we'll all know that when we forgive, it's really hard sometimes not to let negative thoughts about something or somebody creep back into our mind and take root again. So total forgiveness is far, far, far from easy. People talk one way about forgiveness and perhaps do another. I get that. And if anybody could have wreaked vengeance against his brothers, well, Joseph certainly had just deserts to do that from a worldly perspective. He had the army at his disposal. He could have snapped his fingers and each one of them could have been thrown into prison or far worse. And yet he does none of that. What does Joseph do? He responds with compassion towards his brothers, and he forgives everything. You know, even when he's testing them, he shows them mercy by restoring their money, giving them what they needed to survive. And this is what I would say to anyone who struggles with forgiving somebody. Unforgiveness and malice is poison to your own body and soul. I think it was Anne Lamott that once said, not forgiving someone is like drinking rat poison and hoping that the rat dies. It impacts us far more. Now, if Joseph can forgive his brothers who toyed with his life, sold him into slavery, it suggests you and I can forgive as well. I don't know, you know, your situation, and I don't want to presume, as we present Mission 66 today, I don't know what you may have suffered. Forgiveness and what I'm saying might seem a ludicrous suggestion to you as we talk about it now. Perhaps it just seems impossible. But let me share with you the words of Anne Graham Lotz. She said, if Jesus forgave those who nailed him to the cross, and if God forgives you and he forgives me, how can you withhold your forgiveness from somebody else? It is possible, and we set ourselves free when we forgive those who have a hold of bitterness and anger over us, whether they live near us, a long way away, or if we don't even know where they are now, or if they've even died. The truth is the same, and that is that forgiveness leads to freedom. Freedom from the impact somebody else's actions have had on our body, minds, and souls.
You know, it's when you mention things like that, John, that I feel we need to take a moment to really take it in. But I do want to have a look at Joseph's life in totality and how God brought him from the pit to the palace. And we know that that was his unique experience. But in general, I suppose we shouldn't expect that God will always bless us financially, right?
Yeah, I think you're right, Esther. You know, ultimately, we owe God everything. But because he is so gracious, he may, in that grace of his, which is incomparable, he may move us into a higher place than we are now, but it might not be God's plan for you or I. When I say higher place, I use a worldly term there, actually, because God's language is different. God says, the first will be last, and the last will be first. So in that sense, we shouldn't strive to be in a higher place. It's not God's way, I don't think. But sometimes in his grace, he enables that position. And I think one thing that is worth saying is that if he gives us that responsibility, well, then we need to be in a position where we can handle it. You know, God here had worked a lot in Joseph's heart in order to bring him to where he was able to handle the responsibility that he was given. And that's a tremendous lesson, isn't it? Because there are so many of us who may wish to have more wealth and to be more blessed. And perhaps God doesn't allow it to happen because we're not ready for that. Nor maybe that's his path for us. It just may be that God brings people to fires of purification in order to mature them enough to receive what he has in store, whether we would describe that in worldly language as better things or not. Better things in God's eyes very often do not mean financial wealth. Better things in God's eyes often refer to something like a refined character that is becoming more like his son, Jesus. And how much more precious is that than anything that this world offers us?
Absolutely. Oh, yes. Now, John, I know that in previous lessons, we've actually had a conversation about the parallels between Joseph of Genesis and the life of Jesus in the Gospels. Perhaps we can get into a little bit more of those.
Yeah, there are certain parallels. And now that we've finished the account of Joseph's life, we can see some of those. You know, we see both of them were loved by their fathers. Joseph was, for better or worse, the favorite of Jacob. When Jesus was baptized, there came a voice from heaven that said, "This is my son, with whom I am well pleased." Both of them, well, they were shepherds of their father's sheep. Jesus is called the good shepherd, and his sheep hear his voice. Well, both were tempted. Joseph by Potiphar's wife. Jesus was tempted by the devil in the wilderness. Both were taken to Egypt and came out of Egypt. Their robes were taken from them both. Joseph's coat of many colours. Jesus, the soldiers who gambled for his robe at the cross there. They were both sold for the price of a slave. They were both bound in chains and falsely accused. Both were placed with other prisoners, and in each case, one was saved and the other lost. Jesus was crucified, wasn't he, between two thieves. One called him Lord and asked to be included in his kingdom, and to him Jesus said, "Today you will be with me in paradise." The other one rejected him and was lost. And then you have Joseph, similarly imprisoned between Pharaoh's butler and his baker. One was restored to his position and the other was executed. Both Jesus and Joseph, interestingly, were 30 years old at the beginning of their public recognition. They were both promoted after a life of suffering. Joseph into the palace of Pharaoh, Jesus to heaven, where he sits at the right hand of the Father. Both forgave those who wronged them, and both in different ways saved their people. And in both cases, what man intended for evil, God turned around for good. And that is the way, Esther, that Genesis ends.
Well, John, I've certainly enjoyed the study of Genesis. It's been inspiring, it's been enlightening, and I hope that it was for you too, dear listener. Now, John, how should we wrap up our study in Genesis?
Yeah, well, to summarize Genesis, we could call it our roots. In it, we find out where we came from. We find how sin enters the world. We see the judgment of the great flood and how Noah saved himself and seven others in his family with the building of the ark. Then we saw how the different languages and the people groups got started, and how God chose Abraham out of Ur of the Chaldees to go out into the land of promise and become a great nation. Then there followed the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, examples of God's judgment against those who thumb their nose at his moral law. But through Abraham comes the origin of hope and that redeeming promise, later fulfilled in Jesus Christ. And his salvation, Jesus' salvation, reaches out to people everywhere. And the rest of Genesis is the history of the Jewish patriarchs leading up to Joseph, who, after much suffering at the hands of his brothers and others, forgives them and was greatly blessed by God. And I think the key verse of chapter 50 was where Joseph says in verse 20, "You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today." Joseph never put himself at the centre of anything or pictured himself as the victim in our story. You know, our theme for chapter 50 was "Stop Complaining." Perhaps a better title would be "Lord, increase our faith and our intimacy with you, because you have the perfect plan for our lives." And so our difficult circumstances are trials that God ordains for us. He knows they're coming. Why? Well, they teach us humility, dependence upon him. They refine our characters. So it's been great to have been with you through this book of Genesis. And next time, it is Exodus. But for now, I pray that God would be with you today. And I finish with that priestly blessing from Numbers that says, "The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace."
Well, that is it for today, dear friends. We thank you for being with us, and we hope that you will join us next episode. And this is where we'll begin the book of Exodus. Well, I'm Esther for John Matthews and our team saying, until then, this is Mission 66.
As Mission 66 comes to a close, be sure to download your free study guide at mission66.org. Deepen your daily devotion with insights from each episode, and let John and Esther lead you through the scriptures. Get your study guide at mission66.org and be prepared for our next episode. There, you can also connect with us, ask questions, or donate to help Mission 66's worldwide outreach. Head to mission66.org. Mission 66 is made possible through Transworld Radio in partnership with Dr. Luis Seau.